The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM,
another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, this is the cruelest NCAA tournament, right? I mean, this is the cruelest postseason we have. You spend all during the regular season. You build yourself up. You have the conversation nationally about how good you are and how good you can be. And then you get into this puppy, and before you know it, boom, you're out. You're done. Wrap it up. Pack the bags and head back home. That's the feeling of Tennessee. They spent some time as the number one team in the nation. Let's not forget this. But last night, they couldn't overcome Purdue. They couldn't overcome Purdue in the end. They beat out an 18-point deficit. They tied the game, and they had the lead. But Purdue fought their way back in that one, got into overtime, won the game in Tennessee, which I question all year. Are you championship good, Volunteers? Are you really on the national stage championship good? And they weren't. But that doesn't mean they weren't a good basketball team or a great basketball team or whatever. That's what this tournament is. We often look at big pictures for really what is a small situation. You could be an outstanding basketball team, and you could have all sorts of great players. You could have historic players to your program. But this tournament can whittle you down to one moment, one bad game, one bad decision, one bad situation, one hot shooting three-point shot. And before you know it, you're done. But it doesn't eliminate what you do. But we put so much emphasis on this tournament. This is why college basketball, when you don't pay attention to the regular season and you only pay attention to what this tournament will produce, you will not get a clear picture of exactly what the season was. Again, the Volunteers are done, and they're done in the Sweet 16, which a lot of mediocre teams are done in the Sweet 16. But Tennessee was not a mediocre basketball team. They were an outstanding basketball team. They just met a team that played them better and made their shots. Gonzaga beat Florida State, a one advancing. Virginia outlasts Oregon. They advance. Texas Tech smothered Michigan. And you can make the same statement about the Wolverines as I just did about Tennessee. We'll get the thoughts from Thursday's games last night, the four that occurred and the four teams that are advancing to the Elite Eight, including what went down in that final few minutes of regulation in the Volunteers Boilermaker game. It's all coming up. It's Tony D, Ron Culver. It's SB Nation AM.
Is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so you get two threes, I should say, and two ones advancing to the Elite Eight. Gonzaga, no trouble with Florida State. The Seminoles' run comes to an end. Virginia had a tough time with Oregon for about, I don't know, what was it, 50, 35 minutes or so, and then started to pull away a little bit. But that was a close game, back and forth. Texas Tech, that I watched that game, and I was blown away how good defensively Texas Tech was. I knew Michigan was a great defensive team. I just didn't see Texas Tech enough during the regular season to know. KenPom had them, had these two teams 1 and 2 in the defensive efficiency, if you follow that kind of thing. But I was blown away how good the Red Raiders were. Michigan could not hit a shot. This was an ugly game, too. This was like 8-6, 10 minutes into the game. But the game that I thought had the most fireworks, most fun, was Tennessee-Purdue. And so in my household here in Nashville, none of my family roots for Tennessee. Nobody. My wife hates Tennessee because she's from Florida, and my son loves Vanderbilt, and my daughter likes Kentucky, and I went South Carolina. So none of us root for Tennessee. None of us care about Tennessee. And we're not even jumping on the old, well, we live in Tennessee, so let's root for Tennessee bandwagon. I couldn't care less. But I had Tennessee going to the championship game against Duke. So I'm pulling for them, you know, in our family fun bracket. And so that means immediately that my whole family is rooting against them naturally, but more intensely than I am. Because I'm like, you know, I want to win this thing. So we're having a good time watching this game. But I started to realize something throughout this, through the game, that sometimes you give so much effort in a comeback that when you finally reach the top of the mountain, when you finally reach the pinnacle, like you've been fighting and you've been fighting and you're down 16, you're down 14, you're down 12, you're down 9, you're down 7, you're down 5, that when you get to the top, there is a, that you get lax sometimes and you make a dumb decision or two and it costs you the game. And that's what happened in the final seconds of this game against Purdue in regulation. Tennessee went up by two with 8 seconds remaining. And I thought Purdue did an excellent job of getting the ball into the front court. Now, Carson Edwards had the ball. And anytime you're down two, I always wonder what the coach wants. Does the coach want a three, especially if you got a hot shooting kid that can make some shots? And Ryan Klein, I think at that point, was out of the game. Or do you go for the two, the tie, and then, you know, hope something, you know, something happens in overtime? Well, what Purdue did, which I thought was brilliant, was have Carson Edwards run up the court as fast as he possibly could, get into the front court as quickly as he possibly could, drive to the lane, go for the layup. Either two things were going to happen. He's going to make the shot. Actually, three things were going to happen. He's going to make the shot. He'll get fouled, or he'll make the shot and get fouled, right? Because Tennessee was on the run. Well, he didn't make the shot, but they got the ball out of bounds. Now, this sets up Purdue to then throw the inbound pass in their own area, catch and shoot, possibly a three, maybe wherever you can get the inbound pass. But here is where Tennessee faltered. Purdue couldn't get the inbound pass in immediately. And Carson Edwards was covered by Lamonte Turner, who did a really good job of covering Edwards. And it wasn't until the break where Edwards realized, I've got to slide back down to the baseline. So he slid back down to the baseline. Now, at this point, I don't know what the official count was from the referee, but in my head, I'm thinking that 5 second clock, that 5 second clock that's mentally in your head when you're inbounding basketball, that's got to be in that kid's head. That he's held that ball for a very, very long time and he can't find anybody open, and he better get somebody open quickly. You know, you all have internal clocks. If your job demands an internal clock, sometimes you kind of have it. And inbound passers have that 5 second internal clock where I got to get this in. I got to get this in. No one's open. I got to get this in. If I throw it away, we lose. So somebody better be open. And thank goodness Carson Edwards was able to snap off the defense of Lamonte Turner and kick out to the baseline to catch it. Because that thing was clicking and they would have turned the ball over and Tennessee would have won the game. Now, Edwards shoots the three, and this is where the controversy lies. I think he got fouled, and I think most people think he got fouled. But where the controversy lies is when Edwards went up, what you're trying to do, and I think Candace Parker did a pretty good job in the postgame talking about it, is that the shooter is in a cylinder straight up and down. Lamonte Turner, realizing he had gotten beat on the play, comes in to defend the shot. Now, he can't let Edwards shoot that three. That ball goes in, they lose. So he's got to contest that shot the best way he can. But the only way he can contest that shot is if he leans in to Edwards. He is trying to lean in a way, right? So he leaps in, and if you watch the replay, Edwards does enough of a kick to lean in to Lamonte Turner to draw the foul. Now, that's a good play on Edwards' part, but some officials will not give you that foul if you are leaning into a covering defender, a defender coming in on the run. He's not in a stationary position and leaping up. He's actually moving in towards you. But in the end, it was not enough. I still think he got, you know, he got fouled. And I know Tennessee fans went nuts on Twitter last night. But the reality is you got to slow down, calm down. He got touched. So he's going to the line. And he misses the first one. And I can't begin to tell you at this point. He's going to shoot three. He's got a chance to win this game in regulation with three free throws. And he misses the first one. And I can't begin to tell you. I'm nervous for the kid and I'm sitting on my couch. Like, I can't imagine in that arena at that moment trying to rely on every single free throw muscle memory you have after you've missed the first one to get that ball in the hoop. And my daughter, who plays basketball, made a really good point. And I told her she says, well, if you make this one, the next one's easier. And I was like, well, that's probably true. Somebody, you know, if somebody gets a rhythm, it's like a golfer with the putt. Three-footer, miss, I'll take it again. Maybe I'll take it again. So he does make the next one, and then he makes the one to tie the game, and it goes into regulation and into overtime. And at that point, Tennessee falls apart in the overtime. They can't overcome anything. Then Purdue wins the game. And Purdue rightfully won the game. Purdue had led. They played great. Klein was fantastic. He knocked down everything he looked at. There was one time he caught a ball off a pass, just turned around, hucked it, and it went in. And they were the kind of shots that are pretty to look to watch, the ones that don't move the net. They just whoosh. So, and Carson Edwards was fantastic. So Purdue advancing. And this destroys a season for Tennessee in which they had everything together. They had great guard play. They had great leadership. Grant Williams, if he comes back, and who knows if he will lead another volunteer program that should be very, very good next year. But sometimes you get a program, you get a team where everything comes together at the right time. Tennessee is not a one-and-done type of school. It is not a school that draws in the five-star McDonald's All-Americans who want to spend 5 minutes in Knoxville and boogie out of there. Rick Barnes takes in guys. He builds something. It takes maybe a while to build it, but when he gets it good. And he did something at Tennessee, which, at least in the SEC outside of Kentucky, doesn't get done very often. He took all the attention in Knoxville off of football. As everybody was focused on what this basketball team was going to do even before the season started. They were projected to be good. People who were in the know knew they were going to be good. Next year they should be good, but we don't know. We'll see. If Grant Williams comes back, he's the SEC Player of the Year, they'll be fine. But like I said earlier, this is the cruelest of all playoff tournaments. It's the cruelest. Because it's because not only is it one and done, it's one and done on neutral sites, and it's one and done in a sport where you have a great equalizer in the 3-point shot. Now, listen, this I'm not putting Purdue in this upset category. This was not an upset. Purdue was a 3 seed, but we've seen the upsets that have thwarted great basketball teams in this tournament. You look at the NFL, for example, and yes, that's one and done too. But the reality of it is, you go into those things, you could be a 14-2 team, but if you know the NFL and you know the league and you lose to a 10-6 team in the postseason, that's really not a surprise. It's really not a major upset. These are equal football teams by the slimmest of margins. Basketball, you lose 4 games out of 7, you are out, you deserve to lose the playoffs. Same thing in hockey, Major League Baseball, same thing in those series. But you put together these teams from preseason, from March, you know, the Midnight Madness at the beginning of the season, all the way through, all of the time in the gym, all of the road trips, every bit of adversity. You go to the Bahamas in the preseason, you go to Alaska in the preseason, you go play in the Big 12 SEC Challenge, all of those things to challenge yourself, to better yourself, to get to a position where you can take what you have built and win a national championship. And in one game where some decisions are made that are costly, you lose it and it's over and it's quick. And you know what? It's the cruelest of all postseason, but it's the best. It's absolutely the best. because there was a finality. And again, I'm more local on this because I'm dealing with all my Tennessee friends. And there's a finality watching that game. Like even my son said, boy, tomorrow school's going to be depressed. People are going to be really upset. Because there was a finality to this that's just over. And it wasn't over like, well, we're up against the wall, down 3-1 over. We are, hey, we're 40 minutes away from going to the Elite Eight. Oh, shoot, we're not. Over. And, you know, the same holds true for Michigan. The same can be said about a Wolverines team that's played great defense all year. But when they can't shoot, they can't score. They were miserable last night in a game against Texas Tech. They were, 1 for 16 or something from the three-point line? They were held to 36% shooting, 32% shooting. They were 1 for 19 from the three-point line. A smothering Texas Tech defense. And again, everything Michigan has built, 30 wins on the season, gone. Cruelest of all tournaments, but the best of all tournaments. All right, 800-777-2907, and you can hit me up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, and Ron with two N's. Coming up, we'll talk more about the games from Thursday night. We'll get some thoughts into Friday's games. We'll continue with our look at the NCAA tournament. It's all coming up on SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM. On a Friday, you can now earn O Rewards points online at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. Earn points any way you shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You'll receive a $5 reward for every 150 points you earn. Visit orewards.com and become an O'Reilly O Rewards member today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So last night, I got to say, there's sometimes I watch these Sweet 16 games where I say, oh, that's the new team I'm into. Like that's the new team I'm believing in. I think I'm finding that with Texas Tech.
That's what I was going to say. Are you on the Texas Tech bandwagon?
I think I'm finding that with Texas Tech. But that was a hard game to watch, man. It's like there's nothing worse than clang, 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 like all night long. Just ugh.
Well, they made it seem like we all can play.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah,
one for 19.
I can go out there and do that. I think I'm a good 1 for 19er.
Me too. I mean, I stink at basketball, but I think I probably could make one. Yeah. I think a 3-point shot. And at 20 attempts, I think I could knock down one. 1 for 19. That's 5% from the 3-point line.
Oh, I got that. I got that easy.
I could knock down at least one. Oh, heck. My goodness. Jared Culver. Again, I don't see Texas Tech very often.
What's his name?
Jared Culver. So what? I was wondering, Who? You know, yeah, Jared Culver, Mr. Ron.
I know. It's a long lost cousin of mine.
22 points.
I'm going to reach out to him when he moves on to the big time.
Yes. And David Moretti, Italiano from Bologna, Italy. David Moretti. He was fantastic.
Did you
love that guy?
Did you happen to catch his video the other day?
No, I did not.
Oh,
tell
God.
Me there's a good video. Is he doing what is he?
Oh. It's tear worthy.
Why? Because his family's coming in or something? Or?
They did.
They flew his family in from Italy for the game?
Yes.
Did they really?
And the way they did it was the coach had them all assembled. You know, you can tell they're in like a hotel conference room.
Right, right, right.
You know, and they're just, you know, and the coach is just grilling about, you know, your role on this team and you know, just going on and on about that. Like, what are you going to do? How are you going to step up? How are you going to play for the guy next to you? And then he asked Moretti to stand up. And, you know, turn around and say to everyone, who are you playing for? And then he started going into, you know, talking about this guy. And then he caught eyes. And his, I know it was his mom and his brother. I'm not sure if dad was
fantastic.
There. We're sitting in that room the entire time. And just sitting, like, in the back row. And then he instantly, you know, started bawling.
Great. I gotta see that.
It's that feel good, you know, videos that you just gotta watch, and you're just like, yeah, you know, I'm not crying, you're crying.
Or, uh-huh.
You know, the pollen.
Bellissimo, David Moretti. Yeah, it's awesome.
The pollen was getting in my eyes at that time.
Yeah, you got it. Chris Beard, he's a very good coach. Very good coach. I wish I had paid attention to Texas Tech more often. They were a good team. They were ranked. They were rising up. They were a really good basketball team. But, man, they smothered Michigan. And I follow the KenPom rankings and stuff. I'm not a statistical analysis guy, but I just keep tabs as to where they're thinking. And they had these two teams ranked top 1 and 2 in defensive efficiency. And they showed it last night. An ugly game, but, it's one half dozen to the other. If you like good defense, that was the game last night. So Texas Tech might be my team. Gonzaga wins over Florida State. I said at the beginning of this tournament, I really like the Seminoles. I wish they had played a little bit better in this game. They really didn't. They trailed by a lot, and they never really got into the game.
Was it that, or was just... Is Gonzaga actually that good? Because I still have, I'm not giving the Zags any credit yet.
I haven't done it yet either.
I didn't pick them to move into the Elite Eight. And I'm got egg on my face now, and I'm looking at it like, God, maybe they are for real. I mean, you talked about it yesterday. Is there a team that needs to win a tournament?
Yeah. See, that's what I keep thinking about with Gonzaga. And I go back to the fact that, listen, this is no longer a Cinderella school. And here's the cool thing. Let me give you an example. Because I was talking about this in the last segment with Tennessee. Tennessee has built up a really good program behind two really outstanding players in Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams. And Rick Barnes recruited these guys and really has built them up as the cornerstone to this excellent Tennessee team that was good last year and was very, very good this year. But the reality is there's no prediction that this is going to continue, that Tennessee will continue to bring in great player after great player after great player. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I don't know. But Gonzaga has, right? Gonzaga was the Cinderella school 20 years ago that came out of nowhere, that made a run in the tournament that caught all of our attention, and then continued to make those runs with player after player after player. From Adam Morrison, Dan Dickauer, I mean, all the players that have come through Gonzaga that have played really well, Gonzaga continues to make a presence. So what Mark Few has been able to do is he's been able to take the initial, hey, who are we, where are we, wow, this is unbelievable, look, we're in Washington, in case you didn't even know, and turn it into, hey, we become a excellent, stable program that continues to make runs in this NCAA tournament. But then you reach a point where you got to do something with that. Like, it's not cool that you've gone from Cinderella to Blue Blood. As a Blue Blood, you got to win this thing. And I wonder if Gonzaga is, I don't know if there's any pressure. There's probably not. It's not, but I wonder if there is a little bit of, hey guys, when are we actually going to get a championship? If we're going to be the number one seeds all these years, when are we going to turn that into championship currency? When are we going to turn that into a title every now and then? Right? I mean, look, we've seen like UConn get hot and win the whole thing. Like, we were really good and we don't win the whole thing. So I think I agree with you. I haven't given Gonzaga enough credit yet. That was a good defensive performance last night. But this is a team that scores a lot of points. I mean, they put up a lot of points. I mean, they were averaging close to 90 a game into this tournament. But they don't, defensively, this was a really good performance by them. So, give it that for that matter. But I agree with you. I think Gonzaga is one of those teams that probably needs to get over the hump eventually. I mean, when they went to the Final Four a couple of years ago, that was a big deal because they hadn't gone to a Final Four before. And so nevertheless, I think that was a good win for them. But they're going to take on a Texas Tech team that's going to mirror St. Mary's lot.
This is what we were talking about. We all love that Cinderella story. Cinderella's gone. Glass slipper was never even left. But this is the matchup. I'm excited to watch this game.
I am too.
I mean, I had Michigan in the Final Four, so I don't care. My bracket's done. I don't care.
Same thing with Tennessee. I'm now out.
I had Tennessee as well, so I really don't care anymore. I just want to watch good basketball. And, these are the type of matchups we want to see. We want to see Gonzaga versus Texas Tech. We want to see two teams that are just playing at the top of the game right now. And hopefully it can go down to the wire. Hopefully we still really haven't had a buzzer beater.
Yeah, we haven't had a buzzer beater. I mean, last night's overtime game, I was thinking to myself, this is like the most exciting finish I've seen in this entire tournament. just the way that played out with Tennessee getting the dunk to go up by two, mm-hmm. Off the missed shot, and then have, you know, what was Purdue going to do with the ball? That was the most exciting moment of the tournament so far. It was just that series of events. Now, the overtime didn't live up to the hype. Purdue
kind of
went out
away
to a lead and then kind of, and Tennessee made an effort, but wasn't even close. But the regulation ending was the best we've had so far in this tournament, which has been missing a lot of the energy and excitement that we normally get from this thing. But nevertheless, I mean, even the Virginia game, I was flipping back and forth to that one. You know, I wasn't paying as much attention to that one, so I was really watching Texas Tech. But once when that game got close, I flipped over and I was like, okay, this is interesting. Like, okay, Oregon's in this thing, and Oregon had that game tied with 5 minutes to go, and then Virginia clamped down defensively. But you know, what you saw last night outside of the Purdue-Tennessee game was really good defensive efforts by Gonzaga, limiting Florida State, Texas Tech, very much limiting Michigan, and Virginia finally putting some, you know, handcuffs on Oregon for a bit and keeping them to under 50 points. All right, we'll look into Friday's game, but I want to get into Major League Baseball coming up because it was opening day, and boy, oh boy, some teams went, hey, we're here, and we got 162 of these things left. I'll give you my thoughts of opening day and Ron's thoughts as well as we continue on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
So, Ron, I like to do the on pace for moment for Major League Baseball. So, 162 games. Let me do this real quick, because I'm going to break out the calculator for this one, Ron. And I think you'll appreciate it. I'm going to do 162 Major League Baseball games times 8, and that is going to equal 1,296. That's the amount of home runs the Dodgers are on pace for after belting 8 yesterday. Good God! How awesome is that?
Put that down on paper. I mean, you know, it was against a mediocre pitcher, too. Let's not forget.
Yeah. 1,300 home runs for the LA Dodgers. Coming up.
I would, you know, go to Vegas with that number. It's happening. Not a doubt in my mind.
8 home runs. Holy mackerel.
The ball's juiced.
They hit in the first. Yeah, that's what I kept thinking. Like, I'm seeing the highlights going, they get another one?
That's what Granky is thinking. Oh, I was watching that game. I had that game on. Popcorn at the ready. Wish I had a Dodger dog while watching my team play. And that was relaxing.
Yes, very much so. Okay, so this not only was a record for opening day for them, this was a record for them. Total, right? This was a franchise record for a game? Or matched a game?
No, it's a major league record.
It's a major league record?
Major league record to have 8 home runs on opening day.
Oh, my God, really? I thought they tied a record.
Maybe not.
It's possible.
You could have tied a major league record.
You can go a whole season and not see this. I'd go 5 years without seeing this. 8 home runs in a game is incredible.
Yeah, those guys, opening day ticket prices are always really expensive.
Right.
You know, a lot more than, say if you went today.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, once you kick off the season.
Yeah,
right?
the prices dropped dramatically. Dodger fan got their money's worth last night.
No, they did.
That ball was screaming out of there.
You know who got roughed up last night in one of the later games of the evening was Chris Sale of the Red Sox. He got beat up. He gave up 3 home runs to the Mariners.
Who?
The Mariners. Well, the Mariners have those 2 games experience, so it's not Chris Sale's fault. Like, they're already into their season, so they're more, they're not opening the year.
That's
so
true.
So they were like, oh, no, we're good. We've got the jitters out of the way. We're fine now. God, Chris Sale gave up 3 home runs in his outing. I was watching some highlights yesterday, and I saw the Brewers-Cardinals game. And Carlos Martinez hit a shot, and Lorenzo Cain robbed a game-tying home run in the 9th. Great catch that he made in the outfield as Milwaukee won. Yankees looked good. They beat Baltimore 7-2. Jacob DeGrom pitched well. Mets won. The Astros, Justin Verlander, a great outing.
Yeah.
Playing in Tropicana Field.
I mean, Astros looked pretty good as well. I was watching a little bit of that game.
I love opening day. Opening day is the best.
It is.
Then you get into the, okay, now we're in it. Now we're in it, and it's on, But yesterday was fun because all the scores were coming in and we also was playing
We had a perfect game alert.
Yeah, now which one was that? Because I saw the alert, but I didn't see which game it was.
Blue Jays Tigers, Jordan Zimmerman.
Oh, Jordan Zimmerman. Okay.
He took a perfect game into the seventh inning.
Nice. That would have been nice on opening day, too.
And then he gave up a 2-run home run.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, he didn't give it up. But
The A's also experienced in opening up the season and already rolling along. They shut out the Angels. Bryce Harper didn't get a hit. Did Manny Machado get a hit? I don't think he did.
No, he went 0-for as well.
Okay, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, money well spent.
Yeah, money well spent. Mike Trout got a hit. So between the three guys with big money contracts, only got one hit. Let me check on Nolan Arenado just to complete the thought. Nolan Arenado on opening day was 1-for-5. So two hits among the four guys that signed $1 billion in contracts.
And not only that, take it a step further. You know, if you look at the big money contracts, you know, we can now throw Verlander in the big money because he's the highest paid pitcher per year.
That's
Verlander
right.
actually had a decent outing.
He did a really good outing.
But who did Verlander just eclipse? Zach Greinke.
Yeah, who did not.
he had a forgettable outing.
Oh, this is going to be a fun season. This should be really, really interesting. And then, you know, but the pageantry of baseball is pretty cool. I liked all the scenes from around the country and all the stadiums and whatnot and the places that celebrate the game.
It always feels very patriotic.
It does, doesn't it? It really does.
We talked about this yesterday that, you know, when baseball season comes along, there's just like this freshness, this newness, and it kind of ties in with the change of the season. You know, the doldrums of winter are over. Now we're into spring. Even though some parts of the country are still cold, I mean, even down here in Houston, we're supposed to be getting a cold front coming in, so we're not putting away the jackets just yet.
Not yet.
But you know that, hey, warmer days are ahead of us.
That's what I love about baseball, is that feeling like we're really getting into a new season, a different weather season, and the optimism of that. It's very similar. I like fall. Fall is my favorite time of the year. So when we get to football season, I know, the hoodies are going to start to come out. The wet leaves are going to change. Man, we're going to be
sweating all summer long.
Sweating all summer long. Mosquitoes are going to start to die out a little bit. And I'm not going to get all the bugs. And I'm going to start buying full-size candy bars getting ready for Halloween in a couple weeks. Like, that's how I roll. So, by the way, I'm moving into a new house this weekend. I want to be known as the full-size candy bar guy in the new neighborhood. I'm buying the local children and local families.
I would.
They come for Halloween.
I would.
Like, let's go to the new guy's house. And I'm whipping out the Reese's peanut butter cups and the Hershey bars and the Snicker bars all full size. They're going to be like, oh, the new guy's great. It's awesome.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
No, you won't be egging this house. Amazing. But again, a good day in baseball yesterday. Fun statistics, fun kind of moments. So Tropicana Field, though, that the way the Astros played, I can't wait for the Rays to figure out what they want to do there. Every time I watch a game there, I think that doesn't seem like a place to play baseball.
No, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of how the Astrodome looked.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
You know, just a big, ugly field.
Yeah.
The turf isn't even that great. It's like, God, it's just, I bet you players aren't wanting to watch.
I've gone there a few times. My wife's family is from that area. So when we used to go down, we'd catch a game or two and whatnot. Tickets were, you could get buy one, get 10 free, right? I mean, it was the Rays were bad, but it was a cool place to go watch a game. But it wasn't, you'd go in there and you'd notice the catwalk. When they talk about the catwalk, where if the ball hits it, it's like a double, you notice it. It's an eyesore. It's right there. And it's not a aesthetically pleasing place to watch a game. And I know they've had a number of proposals, like they want to build a stadium in Tampa and whatnot that have gotten shot down. But if I'm the Rays, I got to figure out what I want to do. If I want to stay in that area, I got to actually build a ballpark. But the problem is that in Florida, like with the Marlins, you got to build a dome. It's 1,000 degrees in July. You can't play there on getaway days unless you're inside. So you got to have a dome or a retractable dome. And I don't know if the Rays have got enough funding or public interest for a tax bill to fund a stadium for them. I don't think there's enough interest in that area to say, hey, we're going to put a proposal, we're going to raise taxes on blah, 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 whatever it is, to fund a new stadium. I think people would go, nah, they're good. They're good where they're at right now. That dome is fine. Remember, that dome used to be the house, was the home of the Lightning when they first moved to Tampa in the early 90s. I mean, I couldn't. I asked my wife. I said, "Do you ever go to a Lightning game there?" She said, "Once or twice." I go, "What was it like?" She goes, "It's a dome." Like, what a terrible place for a hockey game.
Yeah, just I mean,
they had a football. They have a bowl game that's played in there. I know. Goodness gracious!
I can't imagine a hockey game in that thing.
I know
that would. Yeah.
Ugh. You need an arena. You don't need a stadium.
Let's throw March Madness in there too. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure there's great views.
Exactly. Exactly. Is like Camden Yards outdated now? Like with all the advancements in ballpark stuff.
That was the
place.
That was the most awesome, crazy, good stadium to go see it. And like, but I don't think they're going to change it up because I think what they're trying to do with Camden Yards too is trying to make it. Oh, it's like Fenway and Wrigley. We're going to keep it like this forever.
Yeah, that's right.
That nostalgic feel. I don't know. The one park I want to go to is Brewers.
That looks great.
Is it Miller Park?
Yeah, Miller Park. That looks nice.
That looks like a nice place to watch a game.
You know where else is a very nice ballpark? Is a PNC Park in Pittsburgh. It's got a beautiful view of the city in the. If you're sitting in home plate or anywhere down the line, you get a beautiful view of downtown Pittsburgh from where the park is located. That's another great park. But you know what? Go back to Camden Yards for a second. That really started to usher in a lot of new stadiums for teams. That and I think Jacobs Field, because I think they came around about the same time. But there was, remember the 70s? They had those ashtray cookie cutter dual purpose stadiums that were just horrific with the concrete turf on them. You'd have Veterans Stadium, Riverfront Stadium, Three Rivers Stadium, Busch Stadium, like all these stadiums that housed both the NFL and the Major League Baseball team. And the baseball team would be playing on a diamond where the grass would just be around the bases. Other than that, it was on the green AstroTurf, which is like, you know, a piece of concrete with some green paint on top of it. Guys would get scraped up. And then they started getting rid of those and said, no, we're going to start building some aesthetically pleasing ballparks, like actual baseball stadiums.
I almost want to say
look like baseball stadiums.
I almost feel like the San Francisco Giants started that.
Yeah, they might have started that because they had a nice park.
Yeah, I mean,
because Candlestick was a terrible place to play baseball.
God. But I mean, with San Francisco, I mean, it's one of the few parks where you want to sit in the upper deck.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you're sitting in the upper deck on the first baseline, you have a huge your view is San Francisco Bay. You got Alcatraz Island, you got the bridges.
McCovey Cove.
I mean, but you want to sit up. It's one of those parks you want to sit up high just to kind of get the view.
And so you see these aesthetically nice ballparks, and they're great. I mean, listen, the Braves, for the love of Pete, they had one built. Turner Field was built for the 96 Olympics. Right, they got a new stadium. They had Fulton County Stadium. Again, that used to house the Atlanta Falcons way back in the day. And then they got the last game at Fulton County Stadium was game 5 of the 96 World Series. And then they moved into Turner Field. And then just a couple of years ago, they moved to the suburbs and now play at SunTrust Park. So they got rid of a stadium about 20 years after they got it for another park. Because, you know, why not? If you can build it, right? And that's as we're getting more and more accustomed to certain things, and we want things, you know, we want Wi-Fi and we want nice seats. Listen, one of the problems with going to Fenway Park, and even I guess Wrigley Field, I've never been to Wrigley Field, but I heard it's the same thing. So correct me if I'm wrong. It's what I've heard, but I know this for a fact at Fenway Park is that the seats are small. Right? The seats are accommodating a 19-20 man who weighs 115 pounds. Right? They're not accommodating the 235-pound man.
Typical Chicagoans.
Right? So the seats were tiny. And, you know, you could squeeze into them, but I mean, you're like, ugh. And the other thing at Fenway Park is that you don't see at other ballparks is there are tickets where there's an obstructed view. Because there's a pole in the way. Whereas other stadiums find ways to seat around the pole or whatever. You can get a seat at Fenway Park. It's kind of right in front of you. Those poles right in front of you. But you're in the ballpark. So now these stadiums are coming out. They're just looking better. And yesterday when they kind of went around, like you saw all the bouncing around the league and saw all these stadiums on opening day filled with people and the excitement and the energy. Yeah, no, you're right, Ron. It's a different feeling. It's a fun opening day. It's probably more unique than any other opening in sports. All right, 800-777-2907. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, and that's Ron with two N's as we continue on a Friday on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I'm Michael on Twitter. Turner Field was still beautiful, and nice. SunTrust Park isn't any nicer. But the location is great because it's only an $8 Uber ride for me. That's pretty cool. $8? You get an Uber ride to the stadium instead of $50 for parking or whatever the heck they're charging these days? By the way, this hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Yeah, I wouldn't think Turner Field was a dump, right? I mean, a stadium that's only 20 years old, it's still got to carry a little bit of weight. Give it some time, man. But I was at the last game at Fulton County Stadium. I was at Game 5 of the 96 World Series. It was John Smoltz against Andy Pettit. And the Yankees won, took a 3-2 lead back to New York in the World Series. But that's Atlanta. It's in the suburbs now. Nice ball. I mean, it seems like a nice ballpark, SunTrust Park. I'll take your word for it, Michael, that it's not not any nicer than Turner Field. I haven't been to either one of those places. Do you ever want to do the tour of baseball stadiums? You ever want to, like, take a summer vacation and just drive around, go to these places?
Do I?
I wish. I'd love to.
I want to do it where I can take an entire summer off and do all 30.
It's not bad. That's a nice trip. I wonder how much that would cost, like everything. Gas, food, lodging, tickets.
I would just do cheap tickets. Just try to save on costs. But I would want to, I'd do the RV.
RVing. All right. Yeah. That's not a bad way to go. Do the RVing.
Because you travel. I mean, you figure.
You're going to be on the road all the time. You don't want to live in a hotel all summer.
No.
Checking in and out, packing your suitcase, unpacking a suitcase.
That can get expensive.
No, you don't want to do that.
Come on. Flights would be outrageous.
No.
But if you just drive around, you can do it out of the summer.
I've heard people do this, and whenever I hear somebody say, like, they're going to run across America for charity, right? I go, how do you afford to do that? Like, how do you just take a 6 months off and go run around the world? Like, I saw one person was going to row across the Atlantic Ocean or something. I was like, what? How? Like, where do you, who provides you with income to row across the Atlantic Ocean? But the baseball thing, the going around with baseball, that's a real thing. People actually do that. They take 3 months off and they travel around. They go to ballpark after ballpark. Those would be pretty fantastic. SB Nation Radio.